Nous avons le plaisir aujourd'hui d'accueillir Amos Fiat, qui vient tout droit d'Israël pour venir nous parler de ses travaux ici à Paris au Collège de France. Amos Fiat est professeur à l'Université de Tel Aviv. Il a travaillé dans beaucoup de domaines, en particulier problème de cryptographie, problème de théorie des jeux algorithmiques, problème d'algorithmique en ligne, où les données arrivent au fil du temps, domaine qu'il a contribué à créer et à développer. Et il a récemment reçu le prix Canellakis en récompense de toutes ses contributions à la recherche en conception et analyse d'algorithmes. Amos Fiat.
Thank you. Great pleasure to be here. Thank you very much for inviting me. Recently I made a list of all my co-authors. These are actually all my co-authors. Not all of them are co-authors about the work I'll be talking about today. This is my self-image, and you can recognize Claire over there. I'll be talking about dynamic pricing today, but I want to put this in some context. So there's this field of algorithmic mechanism design, which has been developing over the past 20 years. And it's based upon mechanism design, which is an economic field. One often thinks of mechanism design as inverse game theory. Game theory asks the question, given a game, how will agents or players play the game? Mechanism design asks the question, we can design the game and we want to achieve certain goals. How should we design the game to achieve that goal? I noticed in the talk, the VCG mechanism was mentioned, the first price auctions were mentioned. These are examples of mechanisms. First price auctions are not truthful. In other words, people have to strategize about them. VCG, or Vickery second price, which is a special case, are truthful. People, in theory, do not have to strategize. Then the internet came into being, and there were a lot of game theoretic and mechanism design questions that arose in the context of the internet. In particular, perhaps the most important is the all the issues relating to commerce on the internet. AdWords, this represents the most massive economic activity now taking place at every second of the day. And algorithmic mechanism design came into being in this setting, and there were new questions that arose. What are the algorithmic complexities of doing things? And also the approach was different. So I think the main thing that computer science brought was a different approach to the question that economists had not been dealing with previously. So when you want to deal with complex settings, for example, these massive spectrum auctions that happened in Europe and the United States, or you want to talk about the complex settings in cloud computing, you can come up with mechanisms, but these mechanisms are non-trivial. And the VCG mechanism that Claire mentioned, in a very special case of one item being sold and multiple bidders, it actually has a simple form. It's the second price. But VCG is a very general mechanism that works in basically in almost every quasi-linear setting. And yet it's not clear why people would trust it, why people would believe in it. It's very complex. Participants might hesitate to take part in it, and so on. So as a response to that, there was this taking the step backwards and saying, well, let's look at simple mechanisms. Simple mechanisms, for example, are the first price auction, the simplest thing you see, what you see in every TV show, you know, somebody with a gavel that hits the table and says, going, going, gone, right? The thing is that these are non-truthful. So in other words, people have to strategize about what they're going to bid. And this becomes somewhat complex in all sorts of settings. Typically, we talk about, say, a sealed bid auction, where you put your bid within an envelope and everybody hands these bids to you, puts in some kind of box, and then they're open and the top bid wins. You have to think a lot about what you're going to put in that envelope. Okay? So these are simple but non-truthful mechanisms. But there is one very simple mechanism that we're all familiar with, that we know from every place, which is the posted prices. And posted prices are something that we see every place, in a supermarket, when we buy a car, or whatever. And the setting I'm going to be talking about is an online setting. So now there are things that happen over time, and we want to set posted prices over time. So these are dynamic posted prices. So this is the general setting that we're in. Now, these are posted prices. We're all familiar with posted prices, right? Dynamic posted prices is something we're also familiar with. Because, I mean, now the price of these bananas has just gone up. And now the price of these bananas has gone down, but the price of the gasoline has changed, and so on. So these are dynamic prices. They change over time in response to different circumstances that occur over time. Well, Layesian equilibrium is one form of posted prices that has very nice properties. So you assign prices to items. Every agent, every buyer chooses the best thing they can get in the market. So they have a valuation for every set of items. They know what the prices are. They take the difference. This is a quasi-linear setting. It's the valuation minus the price. And this has the market clears in the sense that everything is sold except things that have zero price, which means that nobody wants them. And more of a social welfare, which is the sum of valuations, is maximized. And this is a general, this is true for Layesian prices in general. When we talk about prices, what do we want them for? So one reason we might want prices is because we want to maximize revenue, right? This is a political statement. But they can also be used to benefit society, and they're used in various ways. So carbon taxes is something that we've heard about. Subsidies, and there's all sorts of examples. I mean, you might have to charge for some fast route into Paris. Sin taxes in general are taxes that are trying to control human behavior by setting taxes upon them. So I'll be talking about a variety of settings today for dynamic pricing with the goal of achieving social welfare. And what social welfare is depends on the context, what the setting is. I'll be talking about parking problems. I'll be talking about service calls, about markets, about queue control. I mean, you might want to be able to control people entering a queue. I won't be talking, but I'll mention something about Uber search pricing. So all these things are dynamic price, or you deal with via dynamic pricing, and you try to achieve some social goal. Now the underlying assumption behind all of this is that people will not do things unless they're self-interested and driven to do so. So they're selfish. They will act according to their self-interest. You can't really ask them to do something for the greater good. And of course, when you ask them who they are, they could just lie. I mean, they could tell you all sorts of things that are completely false. So they will not work against their own personal best benefit, but they might do something. They have no interest in doing something for the social good. And I should say that there's lots and lots of open problems here that I will mention over the course of this talk. So these are some of the more relevant papers that I will be going over. You don't have to read them now. I'll mention, though, that this lottery pricing equilibria is something that I'm actually not going to talk about, but in real life, people have budgets, which is another concern, which is actually dealt with very poorly in the general setting of quasi-linear valuations, because people have a limited budget. They can't, even though I really want something, I can't afford it, so I can't really buy it. And you have to take budgets into account. And to do that, you need to introduce lotteries and randomization. So I'll just mention that, because I'm not going to mention budgets anymore. So let's talk about a killer motivation, which is parking. I mean, I'm going to look at the following definition of what the social cost is. We can talk about social benefit, I mean, adding up good things, or social costs, which is adding up bad things. And we want to minimize social cost or maximize social benefit. And in this, for this talk, I'll talk about the social cost, which is the sum of the distances between where your car is parked and where you want to get to. So this is, we could argue if that's a reasonable measure of social cost or not, but it's some measure of social cost. We need to fix something. And this has been known that the social cost can be very, very bad if people act greedily. So let's look at this example. Actually, I'm something wrong. Did something wrong. Okay, let's look at this example. So you notice there's a car. Every one of these dots is a coffee shop. And the first guy wants to go to the first coffee shop, and the one that's all the way on the right, but one. I mean, second from the right. And he's going to park there. Now another car is going to come in. And wants to go to the very same coffee shop. But there's two parking lots, and one is slightly closer than the other. So because the driver is greedy and selfish, he's going to park at the nearest parking lot. I'm going the wrong way. So you're going to park over here, because 1 minus epsilon is less than 1. Now another guy wants to go, and he actually wants to go to the second coffee shop, the third coffee shop from the right. But that place is taken. There's no parking lot. So he can go either to the right or to the left. But in this case, the prices are such that going to the left is going to be cheaper. I mean, it's going to be better than going to the right, because it's 2 minus 2 epsilon versus 2 minus epsilon. I hope you can see that these are distances at the bottom. So the greedy car that comes in is going to head out, going to go towards the left. Now another car is coming in. It wants to go to this coffee shop. I mean, this is the fourth coffee shop. And you can see what's happening. So in fact, if we sum up all these distances, we get something like exponential in the number of cars. But note the following. You could actually, if the first guy were to park, or if the second guy were to park not to the right, but to the left of his target, then everybody would park exactly at their target, and the cost, the sum of the social costs would be 1. So there's it's constant versus exponential. It's a pretty big gap. So this problem, and more generally, this in arbitrary metric space is called as the metric matching problem. And there's a very simple algorithm that's log n competitive. Log n competitive means that it's no more than a factor of log n times the optimal solution in expectation. It's a randomized algorithm, so it's in expectation. And the thing about an online algorithm is the following. Somebody comes to town. You think of an app. You tell where you want to go to. You tell the algorithm or the system where you want to go to. It directs you to a parking spot. So it's under the assumption that people will reveal where they're going, the true destination, and they will listen to whatever they're told and will obey that thing. So this is how online. So there's a whole world of online computation and online. Algorithm setting is that the events are non-strategic. They behave. They're well-behaved. They report their true nature, their true type. And whatever you decide for this event actually happens. So this is a setting. So this algorithm has a number of things. One thing is that it actually is not the right thing to tell this algorithm where you want to go. You can actually gain by lying and telling it you want to go somewhere else, and you'll actually get a closer parking spot. So that's not a good feature, because then people are motivated to lie, and it's garbage in, garbage out. And anyway, this assumption that you can direct people to park where you want them to park is somewhat dubious. I mean. So the concept that I'm trying to put forward is that of pricing. So we want to price, in this context, we want to price parking spots. In other contexts, we want to price completely other things. And the pricing has to be dynamic. So we set surcharge, or a price for parking in a certain spot. And that's it. From now on, we let market forces do the rest. And adapt to changing circumstances. And another really important feature is that we don't really want to interact with the agent, with the cars. We don't want to ask people whether you want to go, because why would they tell us anyway? And maybe they're actually embarrassed about where they want to go. So it's something that you really don't want to ask people, but they make their own decision. And the thing is, we're going to have a good solution, log n competitive, with respect to the optimal solution that knows where everybody's true destination is, even though the algorithm does not know the true destination of these people. So somehow we're magically managing to do things in a way that we meet some optimization goal, even though we don't know what the input is. Now, this idea of dynamic pricing for parking is not new. There's a professor at UCLA, Soup, who has an entire book, and hundreds of papers about parking and about congestion and about cities. It's a whole thing in urban design about how you deal with parking in cities and whether you should have more parking, less parking, do away with cars altogether. And SF, and in San Francisco and in Los Angeles, there's two systems that do dynamic parking. They're based on a different concept, which is that they're trying to make sure that there's always available parking spots. They're not minimizing this complex goal of sum of distances, but they're trying to make sure that in every block there's available parking spots. So basically, the prices rises and drops as a function of the congestion. Let me give you the complete algorithm now, because it's so simple. I can give it to you in one slide, which is typically. So the algorithm works as follows. If you have a parking spot where you want to go, just park there. But the problem is that where you want to get to, the coffee shop you want to get to, there's already somebody parked there. And there's p- people park to the left and to the right. So now, the algorithm says the following. The algorithm will direct you to the left or to the right, proportional to how close you are to the left or to the right. So there's so basically these are the probabilities here. That you go, in this case, you go to the left, a probability proportional to the distance to the first parking spot on the right, first free parking spot on the right, over the total length of parked cars, and likewise to the left. And surprisingly, this thing is logarithmic, log d max. It's not truthful. It's not truthful because if I actually park here, and I want to go there, there's some probability I'll be sent far away. It's actually a lot better for me to say that I want to park in an empty spot, which is adjacent to this long block of parked cars, and I'll get a much better parking spot. So if I lie, I'll do much better than if I tell the truth. But the algorithm insists that you go with some probability to a further away spot and to another with some probability to a closer spot. Let me also mention that the problem of finding the correct approximation, the correct comparative ratio for this problem on the line, metrical matching on a line or parking on a line, is open. This is logarithmic and it's random. It is entire, as far as we know, there could be a deterministic, constant competitive algorithm for this problem. So this has been open for 20 years or more, but it's entirely possible that there's a constant, deterministic, constant competitive algorithm for this problem. Nobody knows what that would be. How can we do this thing? So we want to emulate the online algorithm, but now using prices, so that nobody will have an incentive to deviate and that we don't actually have to know where they're going, we don't know where their target is, without anything. We choose a random point. For every block of parked cars, they're interspersed with available spaces. We choose a random point. And what we say is that this, what we really want is that somebody whose target is at that point will be indifferent between going to the left and going to the right. His utility will be the same, or his cost will be the same if he goes to the left or to the right. So in this quasi-linear model where the price gets added to the distance, what we want is that the price of going to V, which is in this case on the left, plus the distance X is equal to the price going to U plus the distance Y. And X and Y were chosen at random. And this, and now we have a condition on what the prices of U and V should be. And once we have the prices at the endpoint, we have to connect them with other prices. So we want that adjacent places ensure that the prices are such that if you go to that place and it's empty, you stay there. So we can write an LP that sort of sews everything together, connects everything up. And we can have different goals. We want to minimize prices, maximize prices. We could have different goals in this linear program. Let me just give you just to explain intuitively what's happening. Why is this the right thing to do? So let's run through the same example before. Initially, all prices are zero. Now, the prices are 1 and 1.5. It's still better to go to the left. Now, the prices have changed again. And now, suddenly, it's better to go to the right. I mean, I didn't say how I chose these. These are made-up numbers. There's some number that came out of this random process. And note that from this point on, all this bad case collapsed. It's no longer relevant because we've sort of dealt with everything in a local fashion. And this is what happens in all of these cases. So let me now talk more generally about the settings we're looking at. Online algorithms. What's an online algorithm? There's events. Events could be anything. These are people that arrive in Paris with a car. These are people that want to go to the bank and stand in line. These are jobs that want to get scheduled on some kind of parallel machine. There's a change in the demand in Uber. These are events. They happen. They happen over time. An online algorithm makes a decision. So there's some event, and it makes a decision. It decides some option. This is what I'm going to decide upon. This has been studied for the past 25 years ad infinitum. I mean, it's been a major field of study. These are online algorithms. Typically, what wants to do in this setting is to compare oneself to an optimal algorithm that knows all events in advance. This is called the comparative ratio. There have been other suggestions as well. In this case, because we're talking about cost, we want to minimize this ratio. Dynamic pricing. The different possible decisions that could be made. One sets a price on every one of these decisions. Think of it as a price on a parking spot, or if you go to a bank and there are seven queues, there's a different price for entering queue number one, there's a different price for entering queue number two, and so on. So this is a surcharge you get for making a decision. There is some inherent cost associated with that decision. This is the outcome cost. So if I go to the bank and I enter a queue and the queue takes me a long time, then the cost is the length of time I'll be in the queue. I could go to a VIP queue and maybe pay more and then have less time that I'll spend in the queue, but then I'll have to pay more to enter that queue. So there's a price for entering that queue or for parking in that spot, and there's also an inherent cost, the distance I have to walk, the length of time I'll spend in the queue, and so on. And the agents, so agents are selfish, and they minimize the sum of the price and the outcome cost. Now, the prices change over time. Something happens. I've learned something new about the world. The prices change. So dynamic prices, prices change over time. Static prices, they're set once and for all. This is truthful and simple. I mean, it's clearly truthful because you never ask anybody anything. Agents come and make their own decisions. I mean, the issue of truthfulness doesn't even arise as such because everybody is by definition working in their selfish self-interest, given the current pricing and the current state of affairs. It's simple. I should say that it's not all that simple because there are other things that could happen. I mean, if you look at the setting of coming to Paris with a car, you see that the prices are really high where you want to have coffee. So you can drive around the block and wait for the prices to change, right? That would be a problem for this type of approach. So I'll mention some of that, but it's not entirely clear because dynamic prices will change and maybe you will strategize about when to do something. Maybe that's a good thing, in fact, but this will be. Okay, so very importantly, the prices are set before the next event arrives. It's not that I see the event and then say I'm going to charge you so-and-so and I'm going to charge you so-and-so. It's a non-discriminatory thing. Anybody who can pay that price can park in this parking spot. Anybody who can pay this price or wants to pay this price can go enter this queue. Anybody who wants to order an Uber car will have to pay this surcharge multiplier. Let me talk about one problem that has been haunting me for most of my life, the K-server problem. K-servers are located in some metric space. A request sequence arrives. You have to move a server to deal with the request. And the goal is to minimize the total distance traversed by the servers. For every online problem, there's a selfish version of that problem. There could be many selfish versions of that problem, depending on who you define the agents to be. The agents arrive online. The position is private information. The servers now have a surcharge. The decision that the online algorithm make, it said, given a request here, I'm going to move this server over here. Now we let somebody make the decision. There's no central control. Somebody sets the prices for the servers, and now people choose the server that minimizes their total cost. Let me give an example. This is a surface case server problem. These are plumbers. You can order a plumber to fix a leaking faucet at home. You really want them to come quickly because it's flooding your kitchen, right? So there's the distance that from your house to the plumber, which is something you want to minimize because you want the plumber to get there really quickly. But there's also the price that the plumber charges for servicing your faucet. And in this case, which are the two options? So there's a leaky faucet at that point along the line. Which of the two plumbers should one choose? Well, if we choose the one on the left, then the distance is 2, but the price is 6 for a total cost of 8. If we choose the one on the right, the distance is 4, so it's going to take it longer to arrive, but the price is 2 for a sum of 6, so we're going to choose the one on the right. So it's the event that chooses what's going to happen. It's not that some algorithm. The algorithm controls reality by setting prices, not by giving instructions. So 6 plus 2 is greater than 2 plus 4, it moves here. Another faucet over here, and the thing goes on. It goes on. So the price has changed. After something happens, the price has changed. There's a well-known algorithm for the problem, an online algorithm, a non-strategic central control algorithm for this problem. The algorithm seems a bit strange at first because it moves multiple servers or 2 servers. In fact, you don't have to move 2 servers, but it works as follows. If there's a request at that X over there, you take the two, this is on the line, you take the 2 servers that are close to the request and move them at the same speed towards the request. So this seems maybe strange because you're moving somebody who's actually not going to do anything. But you can think of it as actually you leave him where he was, but you keep in mind that he has this new virtual position. And you go on. This is a double cover algorithm. It's optimal. It's k-competitive on the line. We want to be able to replace this algorithm with prices. Now we want to associate prices with servers, with plumbers. So we need something, we need some properties, and once we have these properties, pricing is trivial. So we want one property is locality. We want to make sure that if a request arrives between 2 adjacent servers, one of those 2 servers will actually serve it, and not some other server from further away. This is a locality property. And another property is monotonicity, which says that if a request is served by 2, and 2 is the closest in this case on the left, then if the request were to have occurred anywhere in between, it would also have been served by 2. This seems like a reasonable thing, but it's not clear that any algorithm will have this property. And the theorem is that every local and monotone algorithm can be priced. In the following, we can actually set prices so that the selfish agents behave exactly as though they were working according to the algorithm. So here, for example, there's some point of transition. We say, well, between 1 and 2, which one is going to serve? They're going to move at the same speed. They're going to meet in the middle, right? So so we want that point in the middle to be a point of indifference. if that somebody actually has a leaking faucet at that point in the middle, he doesn't care whether he takes the one on the left or the right. And we can write these conditions, so I won't go into that too long. So we want to produce this local algorithm. We want to produce a local monotone algorithm. We start by making a local algorithm. And let me say that the double cover algorithm is neither local nor monotone. I mean, it's monotone, but not in more general settings. We need an algorithm that is local and monotone. And what we do is that we convert any existing algorithm, or in this case, double cover, which is what we start with, into another algorithm which has these locality and monotonicity properties. And then, once we have that algorithm, we can price it. And this is the conversion algorithm. It's not really important now because I want to move on. But what it's doing essentially is that it's somehow taking the sequence as though it was being dealt by this algorithm A. It's modifying it to a different algorithm that behaves differently but has these locality and monotonicity properties, and that's used for pricing. And this is something that we'll see over and over again. We'll see, this is essentially the only technique we've been available that's been used. We take an existing online algorithm, which is not obviously amiable to pricing, to dynamic pricing. We modify it so that we get conditions that make it possible to convert the algorithm into pricing schemes, and then we do the pricing. So it's a two-stage process. We take some arbitrary algorithm, it's not good for pricing, we modify it, and then we convert it to a pricing scheme. And the algorithm here is actually very, very simple. I mean, we simulate the algorithm. We do a minimum matching between the positions of the real servers and the imaginary positions of this algorithm, and we choose to move the server that is matched to the server that the algorithm moved, and this will be local. This is actually a simulation of what's happening. This is the minimum matching. We move the same server. This is a situation. This is the minimum matching. There's a problem here because this server is not adjacent to the request, so it's not monotone. But there's another matching. In this case, there were two minimum matchings, this and this, that they have exactly the same weight, this crossover, and we can move this server, and then we move an adjacent server. So we've taken an algorithm and converted it to a local algorithm. Another general class of problems that has been dealt with are so-called metrical task systems. Basically, this is an abstraction of a lot of online scenarios. There's a state of the world, and an event comes in. In this case, an event says, what is the cost of dealing with this event in every possible state of the world? And there's also a metric space that describes how much it costs to move from one state of the world to another state of the world. There's all sorts of algorithms that have been studied for MTS, including randomized one. I want to say that if you just run the greedy algorithm in all of these problems, in every one of the problems I'll mention, but let's just see it in the context of metrical task systems, you get something that's very bad. So imagine that the world actually has two states. The states of the world are either S or T. And the cost of moving from state S to state T is one. Now a sequence of events comes in. What are the events? The events say the following. The event is a vector. It says, what is the cost in every one of the states of the world? In this case, the cost of dealing with the event in state S is 1/2, and the cost of dealing with the event in state T is 0. Okay? So if the event is selfish, what does it consider? It can either pay 1/2 and stay in state S, or it can switch from state S to state T and pay 0, but it pays 1 for the switchover cost. So it pays 1. So a selfish event will never switch from state S to state T. I mean, never switch. If I have to take out the garbage and it costs me 1, I mean, so, but I can just, you know, pile up more garbage and it costs me 1/2, I'm never going to take out the garbage. Nobody's ever going to take out the garbage. Nobody's ever going to wash the dishes, right? This is a well-known structure of the world. People are selfish. Without incentives, this is a true state of the world. So no agent ever switches. So in all of these cases, if there's no centralized control and no prices, things are going to get very, very bad very quickly, because selfish agents cannot be trusted to do the socially significant thing. There's no reason for an agent to switch from S to T. It's going to cost him 1/2 if he stays in there. It's going to cost him 1 to switch to T. He doesn't care about future people that will come. I mean, he doesn't care about the future. So he's never going to do that. This is a bunch of results we had. Now, it turns out that for metrical task systems, you can be close to optimum within a constant, the best online algorithm, best possible online algorithm. For case servers on the line and on trees, you can actually be optimal with pricing. For metric matching on the line, you can reach what is essentially the best known result today. I mean, we don't know that that can't be improved. Let me just say something here. The world is complicated. There's online algorithms which contain all sorts of things. There's online mechanisms. Dynamic pricing is a special form of online mechanism. And you can also distinguish between different forms of dynamic pricing depending on what the state of knowledge is. What do I actually know about the world? Do I know? So in the parking algorithm that we gave, the only thing we needed to know was where are people parked. We didn't care whether they were going to a coffee shop, whether they were going to visit their aunt. I mean, we didn't have any idea where their actual destination was. The only thing we looked at was where people are parked. If we had more information, we might be able to deal with things more efficiently. Let me go on. So this entire question of states of knowledge goes beyond this talk, but it's another dimension to the problem. Well, Bayesian equilibrium. Prices are assigned to item. Every agent gets a favorite bundle. Social welfare is maximized. These are Bayesian equilibrium. Every agent gets a utility maximizing allocation. They do not exist in general for arbitrary valuations. And what are we talking about now is that they require centralized control regarding tie breaking. Otherwise, they don't work. So they're guaranteed to exist for a class of valuations known as Gauss substitutes. These include the class of valuations called unit demand, which means that everybody wants one item. Think of housing markets or job markets. Everybody wants one job or one house. They want to own 17 houses. And the question is, can the market be coordinated without centralized control? So this is a Wallasian. This is a set of Wallasian prices. So these the queen values the green cup at 4, and the brown cup at 10, right? The cat values the pink cup at 3, and the green cup at 4. Alice values both the blue and the brown cups at 8, and the white rabbit has preferences of 6 and 12. If what's written in the cups are the prices, if these are the prices associated with the cups, then the queen is actually indifferent between the green cup and the brown cup. The green cup gives the queen a utility of 4 minus 1, which is 3. The brown cup gives the queen a utility of 10 minus 3, which is 3. I'm saying 4 minus 1 is 3, 10 minus 7 is 3. So both of these cups are in her demand set. These are the things she wants, and she's indifferent between, given the current prices. The Alice is indifferent between the blue and the brown. The rabbit is indifferent between the green and the blue. The value the rabbit has for the green is 6. The price is 1, so the utility is 5. And for the blue, it's 12 minus 7, which is also 5. So these links represent the demands, the demands of these participants, given the current prices. Now, there's many ways in which the market can clear. In this case, we're looking for matching in this graph, in this demand pipeline. Looking for a matching in this demand. Okay. So there's a few matchings here. The thing about it is that if we think of agents as arriving one after the other over time, things could go bad. Because if Alice arrives first and chooses the brown cup, and the cat arrives second and chooses the green cup, it doesn't really matter when the rabbit arrives. The queen will not have any cup. Well, she won't be able to get any cup. So even though there was a matching within the demand graph, there wasn't a perfect matching within the demand graph, because people arrived over time and chose things without control, then we could easily wind up in a situation where we're very far from the social optimum. In fact, the Asian prices might be extremely bad. Alice has a price, has a value of R for the blue and a value of 1 for the green. The cat has a value of 0 for the blue and a value of 1 for the green. Alice comes first. She chooses the green because her utility is the same. It's 1 minus 0 is the same as R minus 1. But in this case, the total utility that we have is 1. So the social welfare is 1 versus R plus 1, which is instead of R plus 1. So by having the wrong tie-breaking, we can do things that are extremely bad. So anyway, static prices, let's run forward. Static prices cannot coordinate the market. We have an algorithm for computing these prices that's a polytime algorithm that computes prices that ensure that no matter what the order of arrival, the market will clear. No matter what the order of arrival, the market will clear. I won't go into that now. This is the algorithm. Let me just summarize here. Wallasian pricing. Wallasian prices, centralized tie-breaking, achieve optimal social welfare. If you have arbitrary tie-breaking, you can do things that are arbitrarily bad. And by using dynamic programming, you return to the setting where it's as though you had centralized tie-breaking, even though there is no central authority. Let me just mention another class of problems, because I'm running out of time. We want to have prices associated with queues. The queues might be different. They might have different speeds, or they might, the job might depend on the queue. There might be different servers with different properties. And you want by setting prices or entry cost into this queue, you want to optimize something. These things could be make span, which is one problem, flow time, completion time, sum of completion times, and so on. So the make span problem is this: you want to make sure that all queues are done as soon as possible. The last queue is done as soon as possible. And by setting prices, and every job has some kind of inherent cost for going to that for that machine. So there's a load in this machine or queue. Think of it as a machine or as a queue. So it's completion times. There's some processing time. The processing time could be arbitrary, depending on the individual in the queue. Could be related, so that some machines or some servers are faster than others, and there's a speed. They could be identical. And again, the agent cost is the previous. There's an outcome cost. In this case, it's the previous load, how long it will take for everybody before me to finish, plus how long it will take the server to deal with me, plus another element, which is pi ij, which is the cost we want to associate with this queue. And we can get these results. The interesting thing is that we can actually show a gap here between pricing and online algorithms. In some circumstances, online algorithms, the centralized control, can do things that no dynamic pricing can achieve. So dynamic pricing is not, one might conjecture that anything you can do with an online algorithm, you could do with dynamic pricing. That's not true. You look bemused. Okay, so this happens to me all the time. The critical thing to understand is that the prices are set before the events arrive. So if I could set prices after the event arrives, I could trivially simulate any online algorithm. I could set a price of zero for the alternative that the online algorithm chose, and set a price of infinity for any other alternative, and I'd have a one-to-one correspondence between an online algorithm and a pricing scheme. The problem here arises because these prices have to be sent in advance. I don't ask, you want to park in Paris? I'm going to charge you 17. You want to park? I'm going to charge you 16. I can't do something that depends on the event. I have to do something that's, and I hope that might be have clarified. Because I obviously made a major error in that, because this is the major point that needs to be clarified. The prices are non-discriminatory. The posed in advance. Whatever the event is, it sees the same set of prices for the different alternatives. Yeah, otherwise, it would really be trivial. I mean, otherwise, it wouldn't be interesting at all. Let me go. I think I'm out of time. Right, I am out of time. I'm mistaken. So this is how you price these things. Again, you're simulating some kind of algorithm. Let me go forward. Flow time. Let me mention flow time. This is actually not my result. Flow time is the time between the time that something arrives, a job arrives, a person arrives in the bank, and the time he leaves the bank, which is what you really care about. You care about flow time. And you want to minimize the maximum for flow time. So I posed this problem at Berkeley like a year ago, last November, and then, not long after, the problem was solved. So there is work going on in this problem, and these type of problems. So that what I haven't actually shown you, what I mentioned was make span. Then there was the question of flow time minimization. Another question that you might want to deal with is the sum of completion time, sum of flow times. This is the sum. And we have some results on this thing. It's logarithmically. And this is an open problem that I want to pose, deal with the sum of flow times. So can you come up with a pricing scheme that gives you some guarantee on the comparative ratio of the sum of flow times compared with the optimum? So that's something that has to do with queues. And there's a lot of other problems. I mean, once you think about an online problem in this setting, that you want to have indirect control of agents' actions by pricing things, pricing alternatives, you can think of any online setting and cast it in this way and think of what can I do with pricing? What should I do with pricing? Is pricing possible or not? As I said, for make-spend minimization unrelated machines, there's a very good online algorithm, and any pricing scheme is going to be terrible. Any dynamic pricing is going to be terrible. So there's some kind of property of the problem that makes it amiable to pricing or not. And thank you again. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.